Good evening and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. My co-host tonight, Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst Dean Johnson. On June 24th, in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, the United States Supreme Court stated that the authority to regulate abortion is returned to the states, and that the states may regulate abortion for legitimate reasons. It's 2 months later. You're an employer who operates in multiple states with very diverse regulations. You fund benefits via a federally regulated benefits plan called an ERISA benefits plan that provides for abortion services. Under the laws now in effect in some states, not only is abortion unlawful, but if the employer funded a benefits plan that would pay for abortion elsewhere, you might be prosecuted for aiding and abetting an abortion. Tonight, for employers and employees alike, what do you do? Dean?
Good evening, everyone. And right you are, Jeff. The Dobbs decision and the anti-abortion trigger laws that sprang into effect in its wake not only eviscerated women's rights, it put America's businesses and their employees in an impossible legal bind. Across this state and across the nation, business people are asking themselves, do I risk being sued if I help my employees get reproductive services? Or even worse, if I provide my employees with the medical benefits that I promised, do I risk spending time in some red state prison? Jeff?
This is a topic where emotions run high on all sides. So we want you, our most important guest, to be part of this conversation. Whether you feel the recent decisions took away your fundamental rights or feel your right, the right to life is sacred and we're moving towards a total sense of balance, whatever it is, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And do bear in mind that our guests are here to educate and inform, but they cannot provide you with legal advice. Their opinions don't necessarily reflect the opinion of their employers, of KALW, of NPR, or for that matter, the various clients, constituents, and those who, for whom our guests do what they do. Dean?
You know, Jeff, we're very fortunate tonight in that we have a guest who is helping her clients untangle the legal knots that are left behind in the wake of Dobbs. Jeff, could you tell our guests, tell our listeners about our wonderful guest tonight?
A director at the San Francisco office of Trucker Huss, ERISA and employee benefits attorneys, Mary Powell has extensive experience in handling benefits plans and mergers and acquisitions. Mary has lectured frequently on the Affordable Care Act and executive compensation topics for organizations including Western Pension and Benefits Conference, the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the Bay Area chapter of the National Institute of Pension Administrators. Her clients include large publicly held companies and complex multi-entity healthcare organizations. And with that, Mary, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here, you guys.
Hey, Mary, thanks for coming. You know, I thought I would just start by asking you to give us the overview. I suspect there's a large percentage of our audience who doesn't even know what ERISA is and maybe aren't conversant with the world of employee benefits plans. Could you tell us what you do in a normal time? And not that this is a normal time, but let's just get the overview.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll start just what is ERISA? ERISA is the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. It was a federal statute that got passed in the 70s, and it regulates benefit plans offered by private sector employers. It's the federal statute that says, hey, employers, these are the rules for your benefit plans. And in general, those are the rules that employers follow rather than state laws. And it covers not all benefit plans offered by you know, employers, but it covers your health, your medical, your dental, your retirement plans, your disability. And, you know, it's a federal law that we've been relying on since the 70s. And, you know, what do I do on a regular basis? I help employers design and implement those plans. So a lot of employers don't go buy plans off the shelf. They design them themselves. And there's a ton of rules that govern those plans. Are they taxable? You know, can you have lifetime limits? Who has to be covered by those plans? What's the scope of the benefits? So on a normal day, I'm usually just telling folks what your plan design can be, what you can offer your employees, and the rules regarding those plans.
Let me guess, since Dobbs, I suspect that your days have not been exactly normal.
Yeah, since the Dobbs opinion got leaked, we started to think like, well, what does that mean? Does an employer, are they going to get in trouble for paying for abortion services or travel and lodging for receiving abortion services if their employee is a resident in a state where abortion is illegal and they pay for them to go to receive those services in a state where it is legal to receive those services? But are employers really going to get in trouble for that? I spent a lot of time looking at that.
Yeah, and you represent a lot of big businesses that have facilities in blue states, red states, purple states, all across the spectrum. So you're facing a whole variety of state laws that might impinge upon those previously sacrosanct ERISA plans, no?
Yeah, I mean, in general, we say that ERISA, if you have an ERISA-covered plan, you don't have to care about the state laws. ERISA preempts those state laws. Of course, there's some exceptions to that rule, but in general, we try to have employer adopt plans that can avoid having to comply with all those state rules, which would be very difficult to do. You're right.
Okay, so as our listeners know, I like to bring the elephant in the room right to the front, right at the beginning. So let me ask it this way. Tomorrow is August 25th. The Texas Attorney General, the redoubtable Ken Paxton, has announced that tomorrow Texas SB 1280 goes into effect and he's going to prosecute it to the fullest extent of the law. And SB 1280 in Texas provides that anyone who procures, induces, or provides an abortion or attempts to do so is guilty of a felony. And that felony can carry somewhere between 2 and 99 years in prison, depending on the circumstances. We all know basic criminal law. If you aid and abet in the commission of a felony, you're also guilty of the felony. So if your clients provide travel, lodging, benefits for a substance that can induce an abortion, are they going to wind up being prosecuted in the state of Texas?
Well, I hope not. That's my first answer to that. But I think there's a lot. I mean, I can't stop what Texas is going to do, right? If Texas is going to bring that kind of action against an employer, I can't stop that. But what I can do is tell an employer the best way to protect itself. And the best way to protect itself is if you want to have abortion services, you want to cover abortion services and travel and lodging, you put that in the ERISA plan. Right? Because ERISA is going to preempt a bunch of laws, even criminal laws. ERISA has a provision that preempts state criminal laws unless they're ones of general applicability. And so I don't want an employer to adopt a travel and lodging and abortion service benefit. It's just some random policy that they just pay you cash. And that's how that works. I want you to put it inside an ERISA plan so I can tell Texas when they come knocking on the door, hey, quiet down. We have a risk of preemption on this, and that's protecting our employer.
Might also, it seems to me, be a good idea that the employer doesn't really put any of those things into effect until after the person has stepped outside the state line.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally we're going to say, okay, when employers are talking about having abortion services and travel and lodging in a risk of benefit, they're talking about it for someone who resides in a place like Texas where it's illegal. To allow that employee to go to California and obtain the services, right? That's what they're covering. And I think the issue is, are you aiding and abetting in violation of Texas law when you pay for someone to go to another state where it's legal to receive a service that's illegal in Texas.
Yeah, and you use the term preemption. Could just give us a quick and dirty definition of that.
Well, basically, I just say the federal law here applies. Under ERISA, you can have a medical plan that provides regular medical benefits, and we can talk about what that is. And state, you can't have a law that precludes that. We're going to ignore your state law, and we're just going to follow the federal law.
You know, I'll just step up on my soapbox for a minute. I think I've said a couple of times that I've come to think of Dobbs as just part of a larger attack on democracy. I mean, our statistics show that about 85% of Americans think that women ought to have the right to choose. And Dobbs obviously flies in the face of that, at least for a large part of American women. Another part of that attack on democracy is a thing called Virginia versus EPA. Which the court announced in the same term. And it essentially said that if Congress hasn't specifically told an administrative agency that they can deal with a big social problem, then they're not supposed to mess with it. And the issue there was climate change, which is a giant issue. Is abortion and reproductive services another one of those giant issues where maybe if Congress didn't say, hey, go and deal with this issue, agencies shouldn't deal with that issue and don't have the power? Are we worried about losing preemption?
I actually am not very worried about that. ERISA very particularly lists the kinds of benefits that are covered by it. One is medical care benefits. And, you know, through various laws, that's defined. And it includes surgeries. It includes surgeries and travel and lodging for medical care. And specifically, it includes abortion. So the statute itself does not, but the regulations underneath it and some IRS revenue rulings back in the 70s said services for abortion in a state where abortion is legal, that is considered medical care. And so we do have that. And the IRS even went further to say, you know, obviously illegal abortions are not medical care under the federal rules, but we look at where the abortion service took place to determine if it's legal or illegal. So I feel pretty good that you don't get to take that back now. That's the definition of medical care. Maybe Congress could change it, but where we are now, I feel pretty good it's under ERISA.
So Congress one of the things being, that Go ahead, Jeff.
I'd like to take a step back just a bit for our listeners who may not know what you mean when you say preemption. And preemption simply means that in this case, Congress set up a law that says, for all purposes, this bunch of federal law right here overrides anything that the states may do. We reserve this subject matter to federal law. And the first time I looked at ERISA, just to give you an idea of how broad that preemption is, somebody gets laid off from his job, tells the employer, you never paid me for my vacation time that I've earned, files in small claims court for $1,500 of vacation time that was owed. The employer had their attorneys remove that case to federal court, claiming that the vacation pay was funded by an ERISA-funded plan. Now, I saw that exact scenario play out about 35 years ago. And in those days, that motion cost $10,000, $15,000 to litigate and remove that case to federal court over that $1,500 dispute, because the fact that ERISA overrode was so broadly written by Congress that virtually anything gets pulled out of the state's control. Is that still the way it looks today?
No. The states have, you know, over time, they've gained some more power. That vacation scheme really doesn't work anymore. That's gone back to the states as a wage and hour issue. And the states also have control over fully insured products. So when we're talking about ERISA preemption, we're really talking about self-funded benefit programs that the employer sets up, designs, and pays out of its general assets. That's what really has the preemption that we're talking about.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden, joined by Emmy-nominated legal and political commentator Dean Johnson. Last week, we followed up on the aftermath of the recent Supreme Court decision striking down the right to abortion. We spoke of legal and political action in response. Tonight, we're talking about employers and employee benefits and how that landscape has changed and just what you can do to protect yourself as an employer, what you can do to take advantage as an employee. Our guest tonight is Mary Powell from the firm Trucker Huss, experts in employee benefits and the law. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk about abortion. You want to talk about employee benefits. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. Are they, Dean?
No, they're not. And we welcome this discussion. I know from past episodes discussing Dobbs that there's a lot of emotion and feeling out there, and rightly so. And we really want to hear from you guys. But Mary, getting back to what we were talking about, it sounds like you're pretty comfortable with the notion of, say, someone from a red state like Texas traveling to California to get an abortion funded by a health benefit plan from one of your clients. Am I correct about that? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a fight, but yeah, I feel like I have some good defenses. Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, are you less comfortable with the notion of abortion-inducing drugs? Because the drugs can obviously be taken without leaving Texas and can be transmitted from someplace like California.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting twist in this. If Texas law can apply to a Texas resident when they're in California is a really interesting question. Like, we call that the extraterritorial application of law. Can that occur? And I think when you're in California, it's really hard to have a civil case against a Texas resident when they're in California doing things in California, right? I think the states generally say, hey, what you're doing in California, even though you're a Texas resident, Texas law doesn't apply. But abortion medication is different. Let's say that you are a Texas resident. You go to California because that's where you're going to have a doctor who will prescribe abortion medication to you. And you get it in California. And then you come back to Texas and you ingest it there, one or both of the drugs. Then I think we have a harder question. Does Texas now have jurisdiction? Because a piece of it has occurred inside of Texas rather than the whole thing occurring in California.
Let me ask you a question that, to me, the big picture, the big elephant in the room that nobody's talking about. We've been talking about somebody in Texas, and it could be Texas or Arkansas or Florida. It doesn't matter. It's the same issue. We've been analyzing ability of women in some of these places to receive a safe medical abortion, notwithstanding their state laws. To me, with all that question of the validity of medical coverage for abortions in those states, how is that going to affect women in California? Are they going to have a tougher time finding these policies if some of these other states are able to pressure employers to stop funding them?
Well, I mean, I think you are raising a couple of issues. One is, I think the healthcare system of some states are going to get overloaded, and that's going to impact residents in California, right? I think that's just a fact. And I'm not sure if that's what you were getting at or if you were thinking about it in a different way.
Well, there were really two parts to it. That was one. Is it going to overwhelm California's healthcare system? The other part of that is, does it appear, if you look down the road a ways, that these states pressures on employers to design plans that don't provide abortions. How is that going to impact people in California where abortion may be legal? Are the employers that perhaps are operating across state lines going to stop providing those benefits so that maybe a woman in California is denied benefits because that employer has too big a footprint in Florida or Texas or Arkansas to allow that benefit to be part of their package?
Yeah, I haven't seen that issue yet. It's a very interesting concept. I've seen the flip. What I am seeing today is employers that have a large presence in Texas, Arkansas, Mississippi, they want their employees to have access to abortion services. And how do they get them that? It's a provision that's been in plans and health plans for a very long time. And now we're taking them out. And they're saying, wait a minute. My employees in Texas want access to healthcare in the same way as my employee in California. How do I get that done? So I've seen it that way, Jeff, not the other way that you're talking about. Although it's conceivable. Absolutely, that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a potential chilling effect here, right? I mean, it's great to have a terrific lawyer like you saying, don't worry, we put it in ERISA, preemption protects you. But if I'm the CEO of one of your clients, I'm saying, look, I don't want to fly to Houston and have the Texas police waiting for me. I just don't want to take that risk. So let's change the plan and let's take out the abortion services.
And that is happening right now. But employers are only doing it in those red states, in those states where abortion is restricted or banned. I haven't seen employers then doing that across the board to all aspects of the plan. I have not seen that.
Yeah, and we're certainly, going a little bit outside of ERISA, I think what's implied in this conversation is that there's a real danger of liability. I was thinking today, the San Mateo County Board of Supervisors plans to allocate about $3 million to Planned Parenthood. We have the largest Planned Parenthood facility in the nation here on the peninsula and in Silicon Valley. And it certainly seems to me that if, say, one of our supervisors decided to go to a conference in Houston, he might anticipate that the Texas police would be waiting at the airport saying, you guys funded abortions. That's a second class felony here in Texas and you're under arrest. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility, is it?
No. And in that case, you don't have a risk of preemption. You're going to be relying on constitutional principles there because there's no employer plan. You're talking about, you know, government funding of a clinic. I would hope the states don't use their resources, Texas or Alabama, or someone uses their resources to bring that kind of action. But if they did, I think that supervisor would say, hey, let's just pick on Texas for a minute. Hey, Texas, you can't do that. Let's do that. Yeah. Hey, Texas, you can't do that. People have under the Constitution the idea of the right to interstate travel. You cannot impede people's right to travel. And that's what you're doing. Someone who leaves Texas and comes to California to get legal services, you're putting everyone at risk who has assisted that person to get that medical care. And that impedes their ability to travel between states and you have the right to interstate travel. I don't know if you really have a constitutional right to interstate travel. Certainly the Supreme Court has said you do in certain circumstances. I don't know what impedes your right to travel, but that would be, we would be on arguing constitutional issues at that point.
Yeah, I think you pointed out in our earlier discussions that even Justice Kavanaugh mentions in Dobbs the interstate right to travel and is concerned about maybe this impedes that right. But I think it's pretty fair to say that the justices who voted with the majority in Dobbs would say, hey, look, you've got a right to interstate travel. You can go anywhere you want. Just don't get an abortion when you get there. I mean, isn't that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea is, Kavanaugh says you know, one thing that's not complicated about our decision in Dobbs is we're, you know, a woman could go to another state and receive the services. We, you know, you can't bar that. Mm-hmm. And the dissent says, hey, wait a minute. You know, what is really, what are we saying is the right to interstate travel? I don't think we understand what that is. And you're right. The person can still travel from Texas to California. And the woman or the pregnant person, they're not going to be put in jail. But the person who assists them, who aids and abets, assists them to get those services, they may be put in jail. And is that enough to say it's impeded my right as the pregnant person to go to the state because someone who's helped me will get in trouble?
So is this,
I don't know the answer.
Is this reinstating some of those old arcane laws, such as taking a woman across state lines for immoral purposes?
I hadn't thought about it that way, but I suppose so.
Yeah. So for example, a woman who drove to California to get an abortion may be immune from prosecution, but her husband, if he helped with the driving, might find himself in prison when he got back to Texas.
Right. And I think, you know, the first people that really made that clear right in the beginning when SB 8 in Texas, the Texas heartbeat law got passed, was Lyft. And they said, hey, we're going to support our drivers. If they're driving people across state lines to get, you know, access to health care and they get in trouble, we're here for them. Because that is absolutely right, Dean. That's the person who can, they're aiding and abetting. They're assisting that person in receiving legal care in another state.
So I, you know, I know you advise a lot of businesses, especially on ERISA, but there are, Dobbs creates so many catch-22s for your clients. For example, we recently passed a thing called AB 291 that says if a doctor or, you know, anybody cooperates with a discovery request that aids a prosecution for abortion. So if Texas sends a subpoena to a doctor and says, okay, you performed an abortion, we want all of the medical records of the person that you performed the abortion on. 291 says if you do that, then you face civil penalties in California. On the other hand, if you don't do it, then you're facing a prosecution for contempt in Texas. I mean, how do you deal with this when I'm sure you're getting the phone calls, and how do you advise clients about these catch-22s?
Yeah, I don't actually advise the healthcare providers, but a health plan can get the same request.
Sure.
Right? A health plan can, someone could say, hey, Texas, we're going to sue, you know, X employer because you aided and abetted. We need the information out of the health plan. Luckily, the health plan can say, no, that's HIPAA-protected information. They are not required. They can. They are permitted to send that information, but they're not required. And HHS, Health and Human Services, recently put out information saying, don't forget, health plans, healthcare providers, HIPAA privacy is going to give you some protection in these cases.
Yeah, doesn't HIPAA have an exception for legal process like subpoenas and law enforcement requests and so on?
It does,
yeah.
But it permits the plan. It doesn't require it. So it'll be interesting. I mean, you bring up a good point. I don't know how that will be resolved. But as an employer, I'd say, we're not giving that to you. We don't have to under HIPAA.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org. for more information.
And we've been talking about ERISA plans, employee benefit plans, and the Dobbs decision and what that means for people that might be funding benefit plans that provide for abortion services for people who may receive those services where they're legal, but perhaps they live somewhere where they're not.
So we've been talking a lot about criminal issues and people potentially going to jail, but there are a lot of civil issues here. For instance, Texas has this unique statute where they have private citizens empowered to sue people who provide abortions. And I'm wondering if there's a different analysis that applies there. Could somebody civilly sue somebody from Texas? And we're picking on Texas, but this could be, you know, any of the trigger law states. Could somebody sue in Texas a California business entity, one of your clients, for providing abortion services and get a Texas judgment and then bring it out here and have it enforced in California?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is that's what we worry about. I'm a little less worried about criminal laws. I'm like, that's not a good use of the state's energy on this. I could be wrong. But a civil case, like you said, the Texas heartbeat law, anyone other than a governmental employee, anyone can bring that action in Texas. I don't have to be your partner, your sibling. It's just anybody can bring that. We call that a bounty hunter law. And they get paid $10,000 for telling the state that either you tried to commit this in violation of the Texas heartbeat law, you tried to get an abortion, or you did get an abortion, or you assisted someone in getting an abortion. And that law even defines aiding and abetting as paying for or reimbursing the cost of an abortion. So that's exactly what an employer plan does. They pay for the cost of an abortion. Now, it's a legal abortion, and arguably it's not in violation of Texas law, but I think we're all going to see how that plays out. But it feels to me a little more like a wild card because anyone can bring it, right? How do I stop that? And we saw recently that the Texas Freedom Caucus sent a litigation hold letter to a law firm in Texas alleging just that. The law firm said, hey, all you Texas employees, if you need to go to another state to receive abortion services, we're going to pay for that. Here's how $4,000 a year and blah, blah, blah. And the Texas Freedom Caucus sends a litigation hold letter and says, hey, that's in violation of the Texas heartbeat law. And the reason there's jurisdiction here is because that person took the drug while in Texas. Even though they got it out of state legally, they ingested it here in Texas. Go ahead.
No, finish your thought. And I'll come in.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the thing we're worried about, Dean, right? That's the thing where I'm saying, wow, I can't stop those guys from bringing that kind of action. And you wonder to yourself, well, how did they know? Like, how do they know that's going on? Where are they going to get the information? And it's just a real reminder to me, like, don't tell anyone. Don't put it in your chat. Don't go tell your friends. I don't know. Just, you don't know how it's going to be. Who's going to find out and bring a bounty hunter case law under the Texas heartbeat law?
Yeah, exactly. And we've had representatives from Planned Parenthood and other organizations on here who have advised women, if you're seeking an abortion in one of these trigger law states, don't go online and do searches. You know, don't use certain apps because that becomes evidence against you. I'm wondering if women don't follow that advice, if they go on the internet, they find abortion services, say, in California or another blue state, If people who are providing services in California are on the internet, doesn't that create some sort of basis for civil jurisdiction and you know, give rise to the jurisdiction in Texas for one of those civil suits?
Yeah, I mean, what we're saying is that if you want to get abortion medication through telehealth, which is exactly the kind of situation you're talking about, healthcare providers are requiring you to go to a state where abortion is legal, you call into telehealth there and you pick up the prescription there. And then you can go back to the state that prohibits it and ingest it there, which has its own risk. But providers who are sitting inside of a state or licensed in a state that prohibits abortions, they're not doing telehealth unless you're in a state that permits it. For the very reason is that's going to create a jurisdictional issue and they could lose their license. Right. That is very serious for them.
You both used the word jurisdiction. And of course, for our listeners, jurisdiction talks about the power of a state to act. And in particular, we're talking about whether a state can apply its laws outside of its own boundaries. And there's some bad precedent there recently, isn't there?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you have some conflicts coming between some of the states. As I understand it, there was recently a decision in Missouri that said, hey, doesn't matter where you go. We've got some folks that cross the border into Kansas for abortions, but we're going to prosecute them when they come back because Missouri law says you can't. And after all, you're a Missouri resident. You're stuck.
Yeah, I mean, the Missouri case, I think, actually is a good case. The Planned Parenthood in Kansas said, hey, when a Missouri resident comes over to Kansas to get abortion services and they're a minor, Kansas doesn't require parental consent. But hey, Missouri, you do. Missouri, can you tell us when we provide those services to a minor in Kansas, does your law apply? And Missouri, the Missouri Supreme Court actually said, no, our laws in Missouri do not apply to that minor who is a Missouri resident who goes to Kansas to get abortion services because all of the abortion services are occurring wholly outside of the state, right? And so Missouri says, we don't have any jurisdiction. The thing that I think Dean is talking about and that also makes me nervous is that's not the world anymore. Like, that's a case from the 90s. The world now is I go to Kansas, I get a prescription. I take, you know, it's a series of drugs. I take one while I'm in Kansas. I come back and I take the second one in the state where I'm a resident where abortion is illegal. Does that give the state jurisdiction? Because I'm no longer having the abortion services wholly outside of that state where abortion is illegal. And I, Jeff, I don't know the answer. I mean, I just don't know the answer, but it's something that we have to think about.
Yeah, and thank God for good old Missouri. They're constantly trying to apply their laws to the rest of the world and constantly getting slapped down so that we recognize the limits on state jurisdiction. But yeah, the underlying point here, in the old days, a state didn't have jurisdiction over anything you did unless you had some sort of physical contact with that state. If you were doing business or you had a car crash in that state. But as Mary points out, the internet kind of blows up that entire paradigm, because if you're on the internet as, say, a telehealth care provider, if you're on the internet, you literally have contact with the entire world. So jurisdiction is greatly expanded. And if they've got jurisdiction over you, they can apply their laws to you, at least arguably. I mean, that's the core of the problem, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, there was a time where you really had to, even for abortion medication, up until recently, you had to go to a doctor's office and take it there, right? That's how you had to do it. But then COVID came along and the FDA said, hey, we're not going to do that anymore. You're going to call in via telehealth. We're going to send you the drug in the mail because no one's going anywhere. We're all just sitting inside. And that changed things dramatically for, like you said, now the jurisdictional issues of where someone is. But I think the doctors who are in red states are trying not to do telehealth. They're in fear of their license and criminal liability.
Yeah.
You know, that begs the next question. We were talking about civil liability across state lines. Governor Newsom recently said, we're not going to honor the judgments of some of these states against people for aiding and abetting or providing an abortion. And yet the Constitution seems to require that we give full faith and credit to other states and their judgments. Where is this going to break? Do we know?
I really don't know. I mean, it's going to be a big battle. And I really actually worry about it more on the criminal side, right? So the idea of if Texas law can reach its criminal laws into your actions in another state, we know that sometimes states do that. And there's, you know, some interesting cases about it. Like, there was a case in California where a trucker had committed some crimes against children. Those children were also residents in California, but he committed the crimes both in California and in Nevada. And the California Supreme Court said, guess what? We get to prosecute those crimes that occurred in Nevada because they had an impact, a direct impact of harm in California. Well, imagine if Texas is like, hey, ending the life of a fetus has direct impact on a resident, a potential resident in Texas. We get to do that. I don't think they'll prevail on that kind of argument, but I think that kind of argument will be made. And I mean, Dean, you might have some idea about this, but I don't know the answer.
No, I don't have the answer either. But what I do know is that there's something to fear there. You look at your typical criminal law jurisdiction statute, whether it be Texas or California, and it talks about effects. So if a crime is conceived, pardon the pun, in Texas, and the intent is formed in Texas, but the actual act is performed in California, then that crime is considered to be committed in part in Texas and in part in California. And either state could potentially have jurisdiction. So, yeah, you could go to California, have an abortion with a California doctor in a California facility, and that doctor could potentially, I think, be hauled into Texas for a criminal prosecution.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big question here that is, you know, none of us know the answer to is the person who is having the abortion, even in the red states, they're not being penalized, right? The laws right now are against the healthcare provider who does it. And so no healthcare provider licensed in Texas is going to do it, right? So the healthcare provider who's doing it is doing it in California where abortion is legal. So arguably, what crime are they committing? And then the person who's aiding and abetting, right, they're aiding and abetting for you to leave Texas when the person who is actually leaving Texas, that's not a crime for them to do that. So it's going to be a stretch of the rules. I think we're going to see it, but I hope those cases don't prevail.
Yeah, and even if people aren't actually going to jail, it's pretty obvious that some of these statutes are designed to bankrupt organizations like Planned Parenthood. For instance, the Texas statute provides for a civil penalty of $10,000 per abortion. And as we've already talked about, our own local Planned Parenthood plans to be, expects to be inundated with out-of-state people seeking abortion services. The Texas criminal statute, which goes into effect tomorrow, provides for a fine of $100,000 per case, per abortion. And the intent there is pretty obvious. And as you say, the real danger here is that they're going to get judgments in Texas without Planned Parenthood or whatever organization even appearing in the court. And then those judgments are going to, we're going to try to enforce those judgments here in California, which could be a disaster. The sheer litigation costs could be disastrous.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. It's $10,000 plus attorney's fees and costs. And we know that that's a really big cost in addition to those $10,000.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about whether a state should have the ability to prosecute cases, whether they're criminal or civil, outside of their borders. What are the responses of some of these states? What are some of the ways that they try to justify it?
To justify bringing those actions?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think the justification is that, you know, a fetus is a life. Life begins at conception, and you are there preserving the life of a potential resident. I mean, I imagine that's the purpose of that.
Is the key then the potential residency in their minds? They're using the police powers they have in order to protect the lives and well-being of people within their state?
Yeah, I mean, I think any state action that's brought by someone and, you know, and the employer is saying, hey, ERISA preemption, which I think is a great argument, or hey, you know, the right to interstate travel, I think the individual in that state is going to say, no, we have 10th Amendment rights under the Constitution, which allows us to pass and enforce laws to protect the health and welfare of our citizens. And that's what we're doing. Again, to me, I'm like, well, which citizen? Because the citizen who wants the abortion services, they're getting the healthcare they want and need. So is it really the citizen who's not yet born? Like, that to me has to be what the argument is. I don't know, but that's my best guess at it.
Brings up a quote of Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, who commented that he found it funny that all folks who speak in favor of abortion have already been born.
Yeah, and the thing that strikes me is how this becomes almost a legal standoff. I mean, the 10th Amendment arguments, as you point out, people in the red states could say, well, we passed these trigger laws to protect the health and safety of our citizens, namely our unborn citizens. People in the blue states could say, yeah, well, we passed laws to protect our citizens from your lawsuits, precisely to protect the health and safety of our citizens and your citizens, namely the ones that have already been born.
Yeah, it's going to be a battle. It'll be a really big battle. And I think these cases, we'll see them over many years. It's going to be decades, I think, of litigation on what, how the states are going to interact and what laws are going to be permitted and the penalties and if you can impede or interfere with people's travel from state to state and what that means. We just don't have clarity on what that's going to be. And it's going to take a long time for the courts to figure this out.
Well, take an educated guess. Where do you think this is going?
Well, I have some hope that medication abortion will be accessible to everyone and that maybe that will resolve the issue for some people. There is a case about that in Mississippi right now, a federal case, where the generic drug maker of mifepristone, which is the abortion medication, is saying, hey, Mississippi, you can't bar people taking abortion medication in your state. Once the FDA says this drug is safe and reliable and can be used, then it's accessible to everyone. And you, the state, can't bar that drug being prescribed in the state. Now, it's Dobbs, actually, very interestingly. Dobbs is back saying, hey, we're not saying we don't agree if it's safe or effective. We're just saying you can't use that drug here for abortion. And I hope that the FDA, once that you go through the FDA certification, and it's very clear that the drug is safe and for these intended purposes, that everyone has access to it, and the states can't restrict people from obtaining that prescription drug. I don't know if that will work. I hope that argument works. I hope we all have access to the same medication. But that would be a big win for people to have access to all kinds of medication, right? We don't usually let the states restrict the medications that the FDA has approved.
Yeah, I can hear the arguments right now from the red states, though. Hey, Supreme Court, traditionally, federal regulations are protected under the Supremacy Clause, but the states have the right to more restrictive regulations. And of course, our regulation is more restrictive in that we allow one less drug than the FDA would allow us to do. So we're not violating the Supremacy Clause here.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. I think that's what they're saying in Mississippi. They're saying, wait a minute, you can comply with federal law and our law. You just don't get to have that drug in the state. But I think the idea of the FDA was once a drug got FDA approval, it was supposed to be accessible to all of us in the nation, right? Once it went through that rigorous process, then that meant the FDA was going to try and make that as easily accessible to everyone. And it's not easily accessible if your state bans it. So, I mean, I'm hoping that the FDA kind of preemption argument or, supremacy argument there wins. And I think that's a part of what we're going to see.
How far along is that case? How far along has the litigation progressed?
Well, had been going on a little ways, and then they had to amend the filings in the case because Dawes went beyond the question that was posed to the Supreme Court, right? The Supreme Court was supposed to just say, can a state ban abortion at 15 weeks? But what the Supreme Court did is they said, we're going to ban the whole, we're going to say the states can ban the whole thing if they want to. So that case had to go back and say, wait a minute, you're going to completely ban this drug, not just at 15 weeks, because the drug is good from week 1 to 10. So I think that case is, kind of got set back a little bit.
Yeah, I can just hear the red state argument now in front of the Supreme Court. Well, Your Honors, look at West Virginia versus EPA. You guys have already said that administrative agencies can't take on big issues like abortion unless The Congress specifically allows them to do so, and they didn't for the FDA. I mean, look at the example of ERISA. When they want somebody to take on abortion, they say so. And that's so as a matter of statutory construction, obviously the FDA exceeded its authority here. I mean, it's just going to be it's going to be legal standoff. It's going to be almost ineluctable catch-22s for many people, including your clients, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and for an employer to have very different prescription drugs that are covered in their plan state to state, it just creates more people having to travel to receive medical services. And it causes more complexity for the employer plan on what they communicate to people, what's covered, when they can get it. And the whole point of ERISA is that we could have, you know, a plan that everyone receives. And so, like you said, it'll be a battle.
Yeah, and on an even higher constitutional level, we have the Commerce Clause, which says, you know, this nation is essentially one free market without barriers. And the idea that you can have a drug in Virginia but not buy it in West Virginia, is antithetical to the very notion of a Commerce Clause and to a single unified national market.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I think that is. So, I mean, I think that case will be interesting. I think, you know, another interesting thing that's going to come out of Dobbs is what does it mean, really, when the court says you don't have the right to an abortion, was really grounded in this right of like a privacy right that the court had relied on since the 60s, right? The court had originally said in the 60s, hey, Connecticut, you can't tell people they can't get counseling about contraception. People kind of have this zone of privacy around them that the state can't reach into and regulate. One of those being married people being counseled on contraception. So a little bit of my concern is when the court says, you know, you don't have this right to an abortion that's kind of grounded in this privacy right, what other rights are we going to say no longer exist? We know that Justice Thomas said, yeah, maybe you don't have the right to contraception. Maybe you don't have the right to gay marriage. Maybe none of those things were really a part of the rights that you were being granted in the Constitution. And I imagine those cases are going to come up to the court. And that's, you know, the scope of Dobbs is so much more, potentially so much more than abortion services.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I find scary. You know, the case we're talking about, Griswold versus Connecticut, which declared a privacy right to have and use contraception. The person who was prosecuted in that case was not somebody who used contraception. It was a doctor who conducted a seminar to teach people how to use contraception. And he was then prosecuted for aiding and abetting the violation of Connecticut's anti-contraception laws.
Right. And so, you know, I think that, right, you know, a couple of weeks after Dobbs came out, the federal government sent out a reminder to everyone, like saying, hey, remember the Affordable Care Act says everyone gets access to free contraception under health plans. Don't forget that. You guys can't change that. Because doctors and pharmacies were getting worried about, well, if I prescribe this, is that going to be considered stopping pregnancy or causing an abortion, or what kind of contraceptions can I have? And I think, you know, can states regulate contraception, and to what level? What level is it, you know, protected under the Affordable Care Act? At what level do the states get to dictate what the rules are? I think that's something else we're going to see here as part of the Dobbs case.
Yeah, I agree, and I share your concerns. As I've said, I've come to see Dobbs as part of a larger attack on democracy. It's certainly Justice Thomas's dictum, if it's even that, indicates that things like same-sex marriage, the right to contraception, even the right of same-sex couples to engage in intimate sexual relations is, in some people's minds, on the table and, mm-hmm. and endangered here. As I've said before, this fight ain't over. It's going to expand. It's going to expand to other rights, and it's going to expand, as we've talked about in this hour, to other issues.
Yeah. And I, you know, we'll see how that goes. And, you know, for me, I feel like if people don't remember anything about this discussion today, if they are an employer, the most important thing I can tell you is if you want to cover abortion services for your employees or the travel and lodging for abortion services, put it in an ERISA plan. And I know ERISA seems complicated and like some weird archaic law that you don't really know what it is and you want to have, you're like, ugh, I just want to put it in some reimbursement policy and I don't want to worry about it. I don't think that's the right decision. What I think you should do is consider the protections that you give the executives of your company and the board of your company when you take those benefits and you put them in the ERISA plan. We want every defense an employer can have when they're providing those kind of benefits. And so don't take what I think is our best defense, ERISA, don't take it away because you think it seems too complicated, too hard. There are many ERISA lawyers. This is all we've been doing for a couple of months. We get it. We know how to do it. We know how to advise companies on it. And it's really important that if you're in-house counsel or your HR, that you talk to an ERISA lawyer so you can advise your executives, your board, what it means to offer this benefit to your employees. So they're aware of the issues.
So in essence, what you're saying is if all else fails, protect yourself from draconian state laws by federalizing your benefits and take them out of the picture, at least, and at least make the attempt.
Yeah, I want you all to love ERISA. That's like my goal on this call. I want you guys to embrace it, make an ERISA plan, protect your board, protect your executives, and give employees the benefits that you want to give them. I mean, if it's you don't want to give them abortion services and travel and lodging, that's fine too. But in doing what, in providing abortion services, just remember there is a risk. You need to advise your company about it. And you really should think about all the ways you can protect your company. Okay. And that's by having an ERISA plan.
And just to be clear, you were a big supporter of ERISA, as were many, many others who were familiar with it long before Dobbs, long before abortion was the issue.
That's true.
Dean, I'll let you get the last question, and because we're about out of time.
Bottom line, last question. CEO of a huge tech company with facilities all over the country, blue states, red states, purple states, comes to you and says, okay, do we continue to provide our abortion and reproductive rights services or not? What's your advice?
I mean, I'm not the decision maker on that, but I'm going to say here's the risk, right? And the ways you protect yourself from those lawsuits is to put it in an ERISA plan. So you have to decide for yourself and the company if you're willing to take on those risks. But I've got very good ways to protect them.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight we've been discussing abortion services and employee health and benefits plans after Dobbs. Tonight's show was produced with the assistance of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. Our guest tonight has been Employee Benefits Attorney Mary Powell. Thanks to my guest and to my esteemed co-host, Dean Johnson. And please join us again next week, where we'll once again talk the law, your legal rights, and best of all, we'll take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and have a good night.